We're going to start a new series today that is going to take us a while to go through, but I think you're going to say, oh man, long series, this is going to be really boring. No, it isn't. It's Proverbs. And Proverbs is a wealth of information, a wealth of wisdom, really, and that's what our study is called, the pathway to wisdom. A wealth of wisdom for you and I in our everyday lives. A wealth of wisdom for you and I in our everyday lives. So we're in lesson one today. We're going to look at a background. We're going to do an introduction to Proverbs. We're not just going to go ahead and get right into it. We've got to talk about a few things to help you to understand the book of Proverbs. To help you to understand the book of Proverbs. Because you may have some thoughts in your mind about Proverbs, but we want to have you have some correct thoughts in your mind about Proverbs as you read them. So we're going to spend some time today looking at the authorship and the date. We're going to look at the value of Proverbs, the nature of Proverbs, reading and understanding Proverbs. So we're going to look at some common mistakes that we make when we look at Proverbs, as well as some guidelines for reading Proverbs, okay, and then we'll finish up with those. So let's go ahead and get started because we've got a lot of material we're going to cover today. Let's ask God to give us some wisdom. First of all, the authorship. How many of you, before I show you this next slide, who can tell me who the author of Proverbs is? Solomon, is that what you're going to say, Lynn? David. Anybody else have a different answer? Okay, Solomon and others. Ramona is right. That Bible is right. Here it is. The book was written at various times and including several authors. Now, how many of you have heard that it was only Solomon? Raise your hand. How many of you have heard that before? Raise your hand. Okay, one. Especially in our circle of churches, for some reason, some pastors feel that if there were different authors, that takes away from the value of the book. And that is not true. It's still God's inspired word. But it is one book, which is a compilation of Proverbs written by different authors at different times. Different authors at different times. So here's what we're going to do now. We're going to look at who the identity of the authors are. So I want you to just see who the identity of the authors are. First of all, is that Solomon wrote chapters 1 through chapters 22, verse 16. He's the author of a majority of the Psalms. That's why a lot of folks will say that Solomon is the author of the Proverbs. I'm saying Psalms, Proverbs. That Solomon is the author of Proverbs. The author of Proverbs. Now, when you get to the next one there, Proverbs 22:17 through 24:34 was written by wise men that lived before Solomon's time. So when you get to this section now, 22:17 through 24:34, these are a collection of Proverbs from what are known as the wise men. Now, who the wise men are, we have no clue. Who they are, we have no clue, but this was compiled into the book of Proverbs, these Proverbs, and they were from before Solomon's time. Before Solomon's time. Now, the next one is Proverbs 25 through 29, again, were written by Solomon, and compiled by the men of Hezekiah. Now, does anybody know who Hezekiah is? Yeah, he's the king of Judah who prayed for a longer life. You remember, he was told to get his house in order, and he prayed and asked, you know, and he didn't want to die, and God gave him 15 extra years of life. He was a good king. He was a godly king. He had his faults. Maybe sometime if we get a chance, we can study Isaiah and look at what those faults are. But during his time, there was a revival. There was a revival that happened in Israel, in Judah, I should say, in the southern kingdom. And with that revival, obviously there must have been a renewed interest in the Word of God. And with a renewed interest in the Word of God, they compiled these Proverbs of Solomon and made them a part of the book of Proverbs. Made them a part of the book of Proverbs. Now, there is a final section of Proverbs, And this may be very helpful for us to know, and that is the next section there, and that is that Proverbs 30 through 31 were written by Agur and King Lemuel. Proverbs 30 through 31 were written by Agur and King Lemuel. Now, anybody know who these guys are? Yes. Okay, okay, I never heard that before, but that's an interpretation. Okay, all right. Lemuel is Solomon's son. That would be a stretch, because how many wives does Solomon have? Anybody remember? 300 wives, 700 concubines. So anyhow, here he is. He's got 300 wives. Whoever you got that view from probably thought that it was one of his. I mean, he must have had a lot of children. A lot of children. Some believe that it is Lemuel or King Agur. Excuse me, King Lemuel or Agur is Solomon himself. Because it couldn't have been Solomon's son, because there was only one son who took the throne, and that was Rehoboam. And I don't think, if you look at Rehoboam's life, that he would have a spiritual capacity to be giving Proverbs. Because if you look at Rehoboam's life, the kingdom split under him. I don't think that he was a godly man, even though he was of the lineage of David. King Agur and Lemuel, we don't know who they are. So if you want to make a side note there in your book, we don't know who they are. I don't accept people saying it's Solomon, because look, we've already seen that most of the book was written by Solomon. If it was Solomon, they would have just said, the words of Solomon. Or, here's the teaching of King Solomon, not instead of King Lemuel. Alright? So, they're more than likely non-Israelites whose identity and whose origins are unknown. But what they shared was under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, and we have those recorded there in Proverbs. Now, there is a famous Proverbs that all you ladies know. Which one's that? Proverbs 31. Does it help you a little bit to know that this teaching is an older teaching, older than Solomon? Does it help you? If it doesn't help you, that's fine. We'll try to help you with that when we get to it, okay? Because a lot of ladies are actually defeated by Proverbs 31. How many of you, you don't have to raise your hand. How many of you could say, yeah, I've been defeated by Proverbs 31? Because a lot of ladies will get defeated by Proverbs 31. Actually, when we go through this study, I'm going to help you get set free from it. Because there's some things there that you need to realize. I'll go ahead and help you. The lady that they're speaking of in Proverbs 31 has servants. She's a woman of wealth. Now, does that fit any of you? There's some principles there that you can apply from your life from Proverbs 31. But a lot of people will say, man, I can't do what she does. Look, she has servants. She has servants. So, all right, so that's really the authorship. Now let's look at the date. The date of it is basically this. There is no possible way to date the book of Proverbs since it was written at various times. There's no way to date this book. Because we have material that's from before Solomon's life. We have material that was compiled after Solomon's life. I will go ahead and tell you that it's earlier than 700 B.C. You say, now why do you know that it's earlier than 700 B.C.? Because in 700 B.C., that's around the time when Judah was taken into captivity to Babylon. So this material, for you and I, in our understanding, is close to 3,000 years old. Close to 3,000 years old. So there's the date. Now let's talk about some background information, because you say, okay, that's great, George, knowing who the authors are and the date. What does that help me to help me understand Proverbs? So let's look at the value of Proverbs. Proverbs, first thing I want you to notice there is this. Proverbs concentrates on practical attitudes. Proverbs concentrates on practical attitudes. What you're going to find in Proverbs is that it is a practical book. And it's going to talk about practical, everyday attitudes for you and I to live by. See, that's why I think even though we're going to take a long time going through Proverbs, you're going to find that the truths of Proverbs are practical things for you and I in our everyday lives. Now, having said that, it's a practical book. Do you have to be a scholar, a brainchild, to understand Proverbs? Anybody? No. No, you don't have to have a theological degree to understand Proverbs. Proverbs are practical wisdom for you and I in our everyday lives. It's not, you don't have to be a theologian to understand. You don't have to be a pastor to understand. You can just be you and open it up and read it, and the meaning will be there. It's practical. The second thing I want you to see is that Proverbs teaches what might be called old-fashioned basic values. Proverbs teaches what might be called old-fashioned basic values. So let me just go ahead and stop. When we go through Proverbs and you see some of the things that Proverbs is teaching, it's going to go contrary to what our culture says. So for example, Proverbs will very clearly talk about the disciplining of children. What's the famous verse that everybody knows from Proverbs concerning the disciplining of children? Yes, spare the rod, spoil the child. Is that contrary to our culture today? So what you're going to see is that Proverbs teaches what might be called old-fashioned basic values. Next thing I want you to see about the value of Proverbs is this. Proverbs provides a collection of advisory statements. The role of Proverbs is to advise you in how to live your life. You understand? It's to advise you how to live your life. It's not necessarily commands. So ladies, when you look at Proverbs 31, it's a description of a woman that the guy who's writing it, King Lemuel, who's writing it, says, this is the kind of woman you want. What happens is that many ladies will go to Proverbs 31 and they'll say, this is the law of the kind of woman I need to be, and you can't be that kind of woman. There's no way. You know, you can reflect some of those things in your life, but I've already told you, she was a woman of means, so she was able to do some of those things. Like, how many of you go around lately and consider a field to buy it? A field, a piece of property. How many of you just kind of go around town? It's really good. I'd like to buy it. Now, your husband may want you to buy it for him to go hunting on. How many of you are doing that? How many of you had the means to do that? She did. So I want you to understand. You've got to understand that when we get to Proverbs 31, which is a year from now, we will talk about that. Okay? All right. Here's you, all right, this next one, put a big star by this one. There is no guarantee that all will go well. There is no guarantee that all will go well. Can I be honest with you? Proverbs, we've already talked about this, what they are, the value of them. They are not promises. If I do this, this will happen. There's no guarantee that it will go well. There's no guarantee that it will go well. Does everybody understand that? Because sometimes we could say, oh, well, I've got a promise right here in the scripture, and it's from Proverbs, and then you get disappointed with God because you didn't see God fulfill what you saw in the Proverbs. So you need to understand that there's no guarantee. This is a collection of wisdom, practical advice for you to live your life day to day. Practical advice for you to live your life day to day. Here, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. How many of you know that your mechanic tells you change your oil every what? And that will help your engine stay what? Healthy. Is that a guarantee that if you meticulously, every time you, in fact, you've got it in the back of the vehicle, you've got your oil change kit right in the back of the vehicle. As soon as it turns 3,000, you pull over, jack it up, and you change the oil right there on the side of the road. Is that going to guarantee that you're not going to have engine problems? No. But it's what? Practical advice for what? Taking care of your vehicle. You understand? There's no guarantees with that. This is the same thing I want you to say about Proverbs. There are no guarantees. There's no guarantees. Okay, the next thing I want you to see is that Proverbs provides a contrast between the life of wisdom and the life of folly. Proverbs provides a contrast between the life of wisdom and the life of folly. So what you're going to see is that you're going to see, and a lot of times the Proverbs are that. You know, blessed is the man who does this, but cursed is the man who does this. You're going to see a contrast between what's right and what's wrong. What happens to the person who does right? What happens to the person who does wrong? Okay, so let's look at the nature of Proverbs. First thing I want you to notice is this. Proverbs does not state everything about truth, but point to it. It's not a statement about everything about truth, but they point to truth. How many of you are confused by what I'm saying? All of truth is not incorporated in the wisdom literature of Proverbs. But what Proverbs will do is will point you in the direction of truth. It will point you into the direction of truth. The second thing I want you to notice about the nature of Proverbs, Proverbs must be understood reasonably and taken from their own terms. You need to study Proverbs reasonably, and with that, you need to take it on its own terms. So, for instance, let me give you an example. How many of you know the Proverbs? Train up a child in the way he shall go, and he shall not depart from it. How many of you know that Proverb? Somebody interpret that for me. What does that mean? Raise them right, they should stay away. Who wants to add to Rob? What Rob said. Bruce said, raise them according to the Bible, they should be a Christian. Okay? Anybody else? How many of you heard those statements? Raise your hand. Okay. All right, I'm going to tell you something. I don't want you to pick up a book and throw it at me. That is not what it means. Oh, I got people ready to throw a book at me. Okay. You say, how can you make that statement? Here, I'll make the statement for you. You need to understand, remember what it says, Proverbs must be understood reasonably and taken on their own terms. First of all, let's remember, who was Proverbs written by? Were they written by Christians? Jews. How did you become a Jew? You were born into it. Very few became proselytes, but for most of it, 99.9% of them, they were born into it. Did they always remain Jews? Did they always remain Jews? Yes. I mean, it's a practical answer. I'm not saying anything profound here. I want you just to give me the answer. Did they? So they were born Jews. They remained Jews until they died. The training that they're talking about here is not spiritual training. And we're going to go over this later. What he's talking about is the training that they're talking about here is a training with reference to their trade. Train up a child in the, you know, you train up a child in the trade and he'll not depart from it. That's what it's talking about. So if you are a shepherd, you train up your child in what? Herding goats and sheep. He's not going to depart from that. You train up a child in, you know, whatever, carpentry, contracting, whatever. He'll not depart from it. That's what it's talking about. Because I want you to understand something. to the Jewish mind at that time, understand from the writer's perspective and the reader's perspective of that time, it never entered into their minds leaving Judaism. Now you say, well, didn't they worship other idols and stuff? Yes, but if you look at history, they worshiped over here at Baal, but they also talked about the Lord, Yahweh. They did both. So this passage is not talking about the salvation of your children. The salvation of your children. Now when we get to that passage a little bit, we'll talk about it a little bit more in depth, but why did I bring that up? Because I want you to understand, Proverbs must be understood reasonably and taken on their own terms. Don't look at Proverbs from the perspective of you as a believer now. Look at it from the perspective of the person who's writing it. Because what happens is if you look at it from the perspective of you as a Christian after Jesus, you're going to make that passage say things that it doesn't say. Because remember, let's go back. I said this earlier. Are there any guarantees with Proverbs? Do we as Christians tend to use that verse we just talked about as a guarantee concerning our children? All right, now let's go on. So that's the nature of Proverbs. Let's go on to talk about reading and understanding Proverbs. We're going to talk about reading and understanding Proverbs. First thing I want you to notice is that Proverbs is most often abused in reading and application. If you're going to abuse Proverbs, you're going to abuse it in your reading. If you're going to abuse it, you're going to abuse it in how you read it, because you're going to enter into it with something else in your mind. Or number two, you're going to apply it to situations that it's not meant to apply to. So you're going to abuse it. So let's talk about then three common mistakes in reading Proverbs. Three common mistakes in reading Proverbs. The first one is partially read. Proverbs are often read only in part. What you're going to see is that, let me just stop for a moment. Proverbs is written in Hebrew poetry. It's wisdom literature. It's written in Hebrew poetry. And there's usually something called parallelism. And Proverbs, usually some of the Proverbs are in two parts. One statement is made, followed by a second statement. That's parallel. And what will happen is that as you read Proverbs, a lot of times people will make the mistake of only reading part of it, leaving out the second part. Part of it reading out the second part. Bits of wisdom teaching from Proverbs taken out of context can sound profound, but they can easily be misapplied. So it can sound very, very profound that you're making this statement from Proverbs, but you didn't keep it within its context. Here, let me give you, this was a statement I learned when I was in school. When you take the text out of the context, if you take text out of the context, what are you left with? A con. You always have to look at the text within the context, because if you take the text out of the context, you're going to be left with a con. And what we don't want you to do is be conned by and defeated by. See, that's my ultimate thing. I don't want you to be defeated by these Proverbs. I want these Proverbs to strengthen your life, to strengthen your walk with God. I don't want you to partially read them and then defeat it saying, well, that didn't apply to me. The second thing I want you to see is that the wisdom terms of Proverbs are often misunderstood. The wisdom terms of Proverbs are often misunderstood. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to take your Bible. I want you to turn to Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 7. Go from the presence of a foolish man when you do not perceive in him the lips of knowledge. Go from the presence of a foolish man when you do not perceive in him the lips of knowledge. What is this verse saying? What's this verse saying? When a guy doesn't make sense, don't listen to him, okay? Ramona agrees with that. Anybody else have a different statement? Don't hang around with those kind of people. All right, that's good, Gene. Anybody else? Okay, next question is, who is a foolish man? Okay, Gene says we all are. I hope not, Gene. We'll see in a minute why. Okay, a man who says there is no God. Okay, he gives a scriptural definition. Anybody else? Who's a foolish man? Okay, let me tell you why sometimes we can take, let's take this verse, verse 7. Actually, I'm pleased with all of you, but verse 7 can actually be taken and misunderstood because of the terms of wisdom. Some have taken this verse to mean that a believer should not associate with the mentally ill or uneducated. Some have taken this verse to mean that you and I should not associate with the mentally ill or the uneducated. Or the uneducated. Because look what it says there. Look at what the verse says. Go from the presence of a foolish man when you do not perceive in him the lips of knowledge. So you don't hang around uneducated people. Some have taken this verse to say that. Now a lot of you are like, ah, that doesn't sound. You're right, it doesn't. It's not. That's why I'm telling you it's misunderstood. Some have taken that to mean that. In Proverbs, fool basically means an infidel or an unbeliever. In Proverbs, a foolish man is like what Bruce said, who says there is no God. In Proverbs, you're going to find that a foolish man is an infidel or an unbeliever. Does everybody understand that? Actually, there's another term for the ignorant. That's called, in Proverbs, the simple. There are three terms to describe people in Proverbs. The wise, those are those who apply Proverbs to their life and live in the light of it. The simple, those who are ignorant. And then there are the fools, who are the ungodly or the unbeliever, who doesn't want to have anything to do with God's truth or God's light or God's word in their life. So, this proverb teaches that if you seek knowledge, you should not seek it from an unbeliever. Now, let me just stop for a moment, because you could even misunderstand what I just said. George says we should not be educated by any unbelievers ever. That is not what I said. What we're saying here, according to Proverbs, is that you and I should not receive knowledge. Now, when we talk about knowledge, what kind of knowledge are we talking about? Spiritual knowledge or everyday applicable knowledge, practical knowledge for your life from unbelievers. It's not talking about that you shouldn't go to school and learn mathematics. It's saying that you should not seek the practical everyday knowledge of life from unbelievers. Okay, that's what it's talking about. Okay, the third mistake we make is this. It's talking about failing to see the overall picture. People often fail to follow the line of argument in Proverbs. People will often fail to follow the line of argument. Do you understand what I'm saying by that? Usually the writer, and he'll sometimes group Proverbs together, and he'll try to follow a line of argument with those proverbs. He's trying to get a point across. And what happens is that folks oftentimes will fail to get the point of what he's saying. And they'll make it say something else than what it's really saying. So it's not getting the point of what Proverbs is saying. Okay? So those are three mistakes. We'll either partially read it, or they'll misunderstand the terms that are being used, or they will not get the point of what it's saying. All right, so now what we're going to do is we're going to finish up here in the last 5 minutes looking at some guidelines. So as you and I begin this study of Proverbs here over the next few weeks, months, there are nine guidelines that you and I need to understand as we are going to read this book. Okay, first one is this. Proverbs are often figurative, pointing beyond themselves. So Proverbs is going to use language that's often figurative. They're going to use figurative language. That is, they're going to say things like, you know, using an example to point to a greater truth. What we want to do is see the greater truth. You know, like, for instance, I'll give you a modern-day George Cannon proverb off the top of my head. I just thought it up, and I'm not a poet. Love is like an apple. We need to look beyond, oh, must be a Red Delicious. Oh, yeah, love can be like a Granny Smith, you know? You know what I'm saying? you know, it's my favorite too. But I mean, but my whole point is you got to look beyond an apple. What's the greater truth that's being communicated? That's what I want you to see. So as you, the first thing you need to know as you're reading Proverbs is that Proverbs are often figurative. You need to look beyond them. Okay, look beyond them to the greater truth. Now here's the second one. This is important. So I want you to put a star by number two. Proverbs are practical, not theoretically, theological. What am I trying to say here? Proverbs are practical. It's not a deep, profound theological truth. You don't get doctrine out of Proverbs. Does everybody understand that? There are some doctrines that are maybe affirmed by Proverbs here, but if I'm gonna get doctrine, I'm not gonna go to the book of Proverbs. Does everybody understand that? It's practical wisdom. Not this profound theological stuff. And sometimes we get scared of Proverbs because we think, man, I don't understand Proverbs in some way. I don't have the theology. No, you're missing the point. The simple message of Proverbs is it. That's it. It's a simple message. There's nothing deeply profound. Like if you read something, you say, well, there must be a deeper meaning there. No, you don't need to look for a deeper meaning there. That's the meaning. That's what he's saying. So it's very important for you and I. So basically, Proverbs are for who? Yeah, for you and I. For everybody. Okay, number three. Proverbs are worded to be memorable, not precise. Now, that's very profound. You need to understand that. Proverbs are worded to be memorable. They're worded so that you will recall them quickly. They're not worded for precision. Now, do you understand what I'm saying when I say that? Does everybody understand what I'm saying? They're not worded so that you have a profound truth. They're just simple statements for you to memorize, to know simple truths. You know, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, Maddie was talking about a tip. And she said, somebody said, what did you say? I should give her a tip? I think she did something for me, and the Lord said, give her a tip. I said, okay, don't take no wooden nickels. Now, that doesn't mean anything today, but that's an old statement from long ago. She said, what? I said, here's another one. If the shoe fits, wear it. You know, those are reflected from 150 years ago. If the shoe fits, wear it. Why? Because you probably didn't have any shoes. And if it fit, you wore it. It didn't matter what it looked like. See, those are statements that, you know, that you remember, but you know, don't try to look for a deep theological truth there. That's what we're talking about with Proverbs. Now, number four, Proverbs are not designed to support selfish behavior. Don't go to Proverbs looking for something to support your habit, your attitude, whatever. It's not designed for that. Proverbs is not designed for you to support selfish behavior. What you're going to see is it's actually there to point out how wrong selfish behavior is. So don't go there and say, boy, I wonder if I can find something in Proverbs. Now, here's number five. This is very profound. Proverbs reflecting ancient culture needs sensible translation. You understand, a lot of the things that we're going to talk about are reflective of their culture. Now remember I told you when these are probably from 3,000 years ago? Do you think culture has changed in 3,000 years? Well, I mean, Solomon says, of course, nothing's new under the sun, so we've still got the same attitudes and stuff, but do you think that, for instance, this is an agrarian culture, a farming culture, is that per se our culture today? Well, we have agriculture here in the area, but that's not the basis of our culture in the United States. So we need to understand that we're looking at a context 3,000 years ago, so therefore we have to be sensible in our translation. I just gave you an example of that. Train up a child in the way he should go, and he shall not depart from it. We need to be sensible in our translation of that and remember what context that verse came out of. You understand? What context that verse came out of. All right, now, number six, Proverbs are not a guarantee from God, but guidelines for good behavior. Proverbs are not a guarantee, are not guarantees from God, but a guideline or guidelines for good behavior. Does everybody understand that? Everybody understand that? So when you look at Proverbs, you're not looking at guarantees, you're looking at guidelines. So like, remember, let's go back to my illustration. Change your oil every 3,000 miles. I know some of them even say 7,000, but change it every 3,000. That's a guideline, right? That's not a guarantee. That's what Proverbs are. Okay. Number seven, they give good advice concerning life, but they are not exhaustive in their coverage. They give good advice concerning life. So it may tell you something about relationships, but it's not all there is to know about relationships in Proverbs. It'll just give you a small saying. So how many of you have heard the statement, it's better to live on the corner of a house than to live with a quarrelsome woman? Oh, okay. Okay. You know, I mean, you've heard that. All right? First of all, let me tell you, in their day, houses had flat roofs. So don't picture yourself up on the pitch of the roof of your house. They had flat roofs, so, you know, so you got to understand the context. And you, now, is that everything there is to know about marriage in that one verse? No. You understand? It's not exhaustive. Okay, here's the other thing. Number eight, next one. Proverbs may use exaggeration and specific language to make their point. Sometimes Proverbs will exaggerate a point for you to get it. Sometimes Proverbs will exaggerate a point for you to get it, just to make the point. Okay, the next one then. Wrongly used, Proverbs may justify a materialistic lifestyle. So let's go back to Proverbs 31. You might be saying, man, honey, for me to be that Proverbs 31 that you want me to be, I need a housekeeper.
Well, you know, sweetie, we can't afford it.
Sweetie, it's right here in the Word. Right here in the Word. Can't argue with the Word. Now, is that a right use? No, that's a wrong use. And it can justify a materialistic lifestyle, can't it? Can it? Rightly used, next one there, rightly used, Proverbs will provide practical advice for daily living. See, that's what we want to get out of this study, is for you and I to have practical advice for daily living. Okay? I think we're going to enjoy this study. All right, let's close our time before we get ready for the morning worship.